Jai Radha. Actually, no, it's good. This is good. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janna Balabha Giribhara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Janna Balabha Giribhara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janna Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribrajakacharya
Ashtotara Shatashishimad
His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribrajakacharya Ashtotara Shatashishimad His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Garantara Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Nitai Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Guru and Shikoranga.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, the Summon Bon on Chapter 11, the Childhood Pastimes of Lord Krishna, text 51 to 53.
53 in the bowl, no?
Okay, so I'm going to read the two first verses. Tan apatam tan sanigrihya tundajor durbhyam bakam kamsasukam satam pati pasyat subale sudodarat lilaya mudabaho biranavati vaurkasham. Translation: when Krishna, the leader of the Vaishnavas, saw that the demon Bakasura, the friend of Kamsa, was endeavoring to attack him, with his arm he captured the demon by the two halves of the beak, and in the presence of all the cowherd boys, Krishna very easily bifurcated him, as a child split a blade of birana grass. By thus killing the demon, Krishna very much pleased the denizens of heaven. Text 52. Tada bakarim shuraloka bashina samakiram nandanamalikadibhi samidirechanakasankasantabais tad bisha gopala shutabishis Vishismire. Translation: at that time, the celestial denizens of the higher planetary systems shower Malika Pushpa, flowers grown in the Nanda Kanana, upon Krishna, the enemy of Bakasura. These they also congratulated him by sounding celestial kettle drums and conch shells, and by offering prayers. Seeing this, the cowherd boys were struck with wonder. And today's verse: Muktan bakasyat upalabhya balaka. Ramadaya pranani vendri yogana. Stanagatam tam parirabhya nibrita. Pranijabat sambrajan etya jachagu. Muktam bakasyat upalabhya balaka. Ramadaya pranani vendri yogana. Stanagatam tam parirabhya nibrita. Praniya vatsan brajan etya tachyagu. Muktam bakasya upalabhya balaka. Ramadaya pranani vendri yogana. Stanagatam tam parirabhya nivritha. Praniya vatsan brajan etya tachyagu. Please read. muktam, thus released, baka asyat, from the mouth of bakasura, upalabhya, get him back, balakaha, all the boys, the playmates, Rama Adajaha, headed by Balaram, Pranam, life, Eva, like, Indriyaha, senses, Ganaha, all of them, Stana Agatam, going to their own place, Tam, unto Krishna, Parirabhya, embracing, Nirvritaha, being free from the danger, Praniya, after collecting, Batsan, all the calf, Brajan Etya, returning to Brajabhumi, Tachjugu loudly declared the incident. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Just as the senses are pacified when consciousness and life return, so when Krishna was free from this danger, all the boys, including Balaram, thought that their life has been restored. They embraced Krishna in good consciousness, and then they collected their own calf and returned to Brajabhumi, where they declared the incident loudly. Purport. It was the practice of the inhabitants of Brajabhumi to compose poetry about the incidents that occurred in the forest when Krishna performed his different activities of killing the asuras. They will compose all the stories in poetry or have this done by professional poets. And then they will sing about these incidents. Thus, it is written here that the boys sung very loudly. Omagyana timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai sri guruve namaha. Namo om vishupadaya krishna prasaya bhutale shrimate rupa swamiti namo. Namo om vishupadaya krishna prasaya bhutale shrimate bhaktivedanta swamin iti namine. Namaste saraswate deve gauravani pracharine nirvishesha shunyavadi pashati adishatarine. Vancha kalpa taruvyasha kripa sindhu vyevacha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha. So the description of the inhabitants of Vrindavan composing beautiful poetry of Krishna's pastimes, and especially the pastimes of Krishna killing all these different demons, Krishna's activities, is very wonderful. We hear when Mother Yasoda was churning the butter, she was singing all these different activities in poetry. And as she's churning the butter, the churning thing or whatever, you know, that pot thing, and the sound that it made, it sounded like a drumming rhythm, like a mridanga. And her, how you call these things? Bangles. When it hit each other, it sounded like, you know, like cartels type of thing. So it was one devotee kirtan. So this beautiful art of poetry or composing to tell Krishna's pastimes. We have that, we receive that from the Vaishnava Acharya, so we have especially we receive so many songs from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Narottam Das Thakur that in many ways, in a very beautiful poetry, describe the pastime both of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. And so we have an experience of what it's like to the type of relationship and exchanges and activities of the devotees of Krishna in the spiritual world. Constantly singing the glories of Krishna. Satatan kirtayantoman. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that devotees always sing my glories. So it's a quality of the devotee. The devotee is, there's many qualities that are there. Religion, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, humility, straightforwardness. So many wonderful qualities. Contrasting what this demon Bakasura represents is the qualities of the devotees are very, very striking. Specifically here, what Bakasura represents, according to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is false religiosity, cunning duplicity, deceptive behavior, and hypocrisy. The outward manifestations of a false lifestyle of cheating activities. So, the Vaishnava Acharya explains that Bakasura, he appeared in the form of a crane. A very gigantic crane, and explains that the crane is a bird that live in the habitat of that bird is also ponds and rivers that are in general very, very nice and beautiful. They're white in general and very elegant and elongated neck and very, very beautiful. And they look very similar to a swan. Very similar type of bird. A lot of similarities in sort of the beauty and the serenity that it creates. And also the sort of elegance, you know, that is there, the attractiveness. And they also live in very similar environments. The swan, in general, is the bird that is compared to the pure devotees of the devotees. And some of the characteristics and behaviors of the swan are also compared to the behavior of the devotees. So devotees are considered swan-like. The crane, it is explained, that has a complete different mood. Also, there's a big difference between the mood of the swan and the crane. The crane he stands very still, very peacefully and still. And in general, we see that he stands in one leg, like a yogi. You know, it's like sometimes we see yogis performing austerity. Sometimes they do stand in one leg. And in perfect still meditation. But what is this crane meditating on? It's meditating on the fish. So, although it appears very peaceful and in great meditation, then the crane is just waiting to deceive the fish into this is a very peaceful entity here, or maybe is not an entity. Sort of, it's a deception. So the fish becomes very confident and they start to swim around the crane, and then zap, the crane captures the fish and eats it. So similarly, this outward manifestation of behavior of being sanely or peaceful or trustworthy is a quality of duplicity and deception that is a demon that is there in most conditioned souls. The one of the four defects of conditioned souls is the propensity to cheat. So it's there in ingrained in the heart of a conditioned soul. So this deceptiousness is a demon that have to be killed. The devotee is considered straightforward. Sarvata Dridha Nishchaya is the Sanskrit name for this quality. Straightforward and firm in their decision. But a straightforward means that the devotee always is able to tell things with no duplicity. Is the devotee is very expert on saying the truth in a palatable way, in a way that people can take it. So they're very expert in that way. But to be deceiving the people is not the business of a devotee. And doing a quick research, I found this scientist sort of analyzing this deception behavior. And it's very interesting because in one sense, we have to acknowledge in one sense that, you know, and the idea, the kindness of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that draw our attention that all these demons, there's the parallel that is there on these anarthas that we have and the demons that Krishna kills in Vrindavan, and how with the appearance of Krishna consciousness in our life, then these demons start to be vanquished, or these anarthas. So we have to be aware of that propensity of being deceptive and sort of, yeah, deceptive, yeah, not being perfectly honest or well, okay, let's leave it. Deceptive is very clear. So I'm going to read this, you know, this scientist analysis of deceptive behavior. I found it interesting. When we think, when thinking about our own deceptive behavior, we like to think in a very narrow and technical terms, like telling someone a blatant falsehood. Of course, it is in our interest to think this way. It makes us feel both less guilty and less accountable for our behavior. Basically, when we define being deceptive, is very much, you know, someone who is blatantly false. But then these scientists analyze that there is a much broader spectrum of being deceptive, and that goes from blatantly false to what we call white lies, which is being, you know, half truth or not the full truth. And then by defining it just on that opposite side, it makes us rationalize that we're okay. We're okay to tell white lies like that. So I keep reading. It makes us feel both less guilty and less accountable for our behavior. Taking such a narrow view of deception helps us maintain a positive self-image, which actually makes it easier to mislead others. It is easier to deceive someone when you don't think of your behavior as being deceptive. This is important given that most deceptions occur through means other than telling the outright lies. In fact, deception is often best accomplished by what is left unsaid. But on the other hand, when we discover that a loved one has been acting in a way which leads us to believe things that are not true, our definition of deception suddenly becomes more inclusive or broad. When it comes to deception, people tend to be rather big hypocrites. When I leave out important details, I'm not misleading you. But when you do the same to me, it feels deceptive. So it goes further like that, but you get the idea that the propensity to, in sort of almost a conscientious way, we try to portray a particular something that hides or misleads people to believe or relate to us in certain way, that that is not actually sort of grounded in a reality or in something that is truth or fully truth, then that propensity is, when we honestly analyze some of the things that many of us do, we can find this type of difficulties. And that becomes a big obstacle in our capacity to touch people's heart and to be able to function as a via media for the mercy that comes from Krishna and the spiritual master. to be able to be a Vaishnava or represent this most magnanimous movement, then it becomes an obstacle when we are accustomed to maintain this type of behavior. We have to be very watchful, and it's not easy. Sometimes, you know, in the matter of leading, we find ourselves tearing purposely half truths or being deceptive in some way, not being straightforward. And we take into consideration sometimes, or rationalize sometimes, many aspects. Oh, what would be the best for this person? Maybe if I tell the truth, this person will be hurt or disrupt our relationship, that type of thing. Administrators sometimes are encouraged to master the art of diplomacy. And in diplomacy, you have sometimes to be able to say, you know, half-truths in order to be able to maintain relationship. And it's accepted, even when it's blatantly, obviously, when it's very apparent for both sides, oh, he's not telling, or she's not telling the full thing. But that's how the system works. So I tell you half true, you tell me half true, and then we fully agree that this is the system. So in the realm of politicians and administrators, that may work. But in the realm of the common public, we feel all cheated and deceived. So that's why Chanika Pandit say, don't trust a politician. Vaishnavas cannot be like that. If we're representing a Vaishnava, we have not to master the art of diplomacy, we have to master the art of telling the truth in a palatable way, in a way that people becomes inspired or becomes sort of touched, but not in a way that becomes, you know, a hurt or insult. So it's an art, it's not easy, but it becomes possible by purity, by purification. So naturally we have to endeavor to represent this and to keep a watch eye of these sort of demoniac propensities. Krishna killed the demon in a very wonderful way and powerful. So the boys, it is explained by the acharyas, saying that, you know, when they saw this gigantic, beautiful bird standing there by the shore of the Yamuna, they immediately became attracted and they came, Krishna and the cowherd boys. You know, he was very standing there, just like the crane stand, and then as soon as Krishna came, he swallowed Krishna. And Krishna became expand his body, so he couldn't swallow him full, and then became very hot, so he have to throw him out. And then he grabbed his beak. It is explained that with one foot he hold the bottom peak down, and then with the other one he just split the bird into two, just as easy as you can split a piece of grass. So very powerful and very wonderful activities that the demigods were like, all like, wow, showering waters and expressing their prayers and their praise, and the cowherd boys were like also in great awe of Krishna's power, and then happily went on narrating these activities very loudly. Any comments or questions? No comments? Krishna Acharya is thinking. You have the microphone? Did you put the battery? Inside and the bottom? No, the other side. There is a
Listen here, Keshav. You know that those lighted boxes that are there?
Yeah.
The two? There's one that have a green light, and there's a little button. Yeah, press that. The button that lit it, and by the green light. Yeah, do you see that green light? There's a little, that's it. Now change the battery.
Anyway, this is a very very thought-provoking, I think, because I find it that to be able to develop, to be able to produce on people trust, we have to watch this. We have to watch it very carefully. This propensity to deceive, and in one sense, and just as the scientist who was analyzing said, is we just cannot see ourselves as being deceptive. We can't see ourselves because we have to rationalize that we're doing something right. We're okay. And that part is the one that is very dangerous. The fact is that it becomes an obstacle in our capacity to generate trust in from others and from devotees, and it becomes an obstacle in the relationships that we have. So we have to be watchful. Yeah. Is it on? Number two. No. Open that door.
Those are on.
Yeah. Okay, talk. Hello.
Thank you, Suhak, for the class. The art of diplomacy is not just something privative for diplomats and politicians. We normally do that as part of our good manners, quote unquote, and our way of conducting ourselves in a regular basis. I don't know how deceptive that can be when we understand that diplomacy has been applied at the moment we have an exchange with somebody in a moment of disagreement or in a moment in which there's a little, yeah, a disagreement or a conflict. I don't want to use the term conflict because not necessarily, but we're not straightforward. We need to use diplomacy in a way in which things are not getting worse. We're not worsening the whole situation. So it's in a regular basis that we use this deceptive, not, also I don't know if deceptive is the proper term, no, deceptive language or attitude towards that we know there's a passive aggression here. The person who I'm exchanging a different point of view is restraining yourself to curse me, or I have to restrain myself not to curse that other person because we have to have everything peacefully. You know, am I clear?
Well, yeah. We have to cultivate certain qualities. Obviously, we're living in a society that encourages basically that it's just part of life. But when we come to be, we're trying to develop the qualities of Vaishnavas, and the problem is when we consciously try to deceive, we're thinking something and we portray something else. So in other words, you know, okay, I don't, example, I don't trust this person. I don't think this person is right for this particular thing. And then I tell you, oh, you know, I trust you with this work or something like that. Or I do see, did something like that. So then, or something that is explained here, you don't reveal everything for the purpose of having the other person think that, oh, everything is in place and all right. So it's better to actually deal, you know, go to conflict resolutions, and, you know, it's better to it's an art to be able to be always honest and straightforward in a way that is not insulting, and it creates resolution. In the same way that people develop almost an art for deception, you know, which is the politicians, then we have to develop this sort of sense of justice and trust and honesty and straightforwardness, all these things. And in general, that when you have people like that, it creates, you know, trust. It creates, like, yeah, you know, even if a person doesn't agree, you sort of can appreciate. In terms of a politician, I remember, you know, and it's a politician that is universally admired because of sort of cultivating some, like an honest, straightforward sort of behavior. Remember seeing a video of Nelson Mandela. In this, he was invited to Israel to some sort of forum or something, and he in that, in front of everybody, he basically said what he thought, that that this how you call when you separate people, segregation, this business of segregating a whole class of people is just like apartheid. So what is happening to this in this conflict of Palestine and Israel, and which is there's some segregation and some discrimination, then it's not different. So he said it straight. I mean, the people were, some people were horrified, but you know, he said it in such a way that he created, you know, to that for the world it was, oh, this is wonderful that someone can be courageous and honest and, you know, and being standing even in that circumstance with that very, very highly conflicting thing, he was able to say like that. So it's a cultivation. We have to make the effort, because it is so sort of ingrained that we take it for granted, and we're fine with it. We're fine. There's no problem. Until you get on the other side of that and you feel deceived, you know, and then, you know, you're not being fully truthful to me, but I do it all the time too. That's what this guy said, you know. So it's quite something. You tend your phone?
People appreciate your honesty, but when you're honest with them about themselves, then you're some derogatory term.
Yes.
There was a fellow named Patel, and he was on the beach with Srila Prabhupada on a morning walk, and
who?
His name was Mr. Patel.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
It was in the BTG.
Yes.
And Prabhupada, told it like it was, and the guy felt, well, I'm a fool, but then he went away being a happy fool. You know what I mean? He was appreciated what Prabhupada did, because he brought him to the higher level.
Yes.
You remember that? It was in the BTG.
Yes. The famous Mr. Patel and the Yuhu Beach walks.
Yes. So, yeah, like... people appreciate your honesty, but when you're honest with them, then you're in conflict with them. You know, you tell it like it is. You're too truthful.
Yeah, sometimes devotees explain that, you know, we can't imitate Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada himself said, I can get away with it, you know. But in one sense, you know, Prabhupada was able to get away with many things because of his purity. People trust immediately. You say, okay, he is a saintly person, someone who is not attached and who doesn't have a personal agenda. You know, they have that sense of trust when you see someone that is
beyond a
highly pure personality. Yeah. Then you can take.
Prabhupada said that little children and old people can go anywhere, but you know, we can't.
Yeah.
And then it says in the 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, at the end of Kali Yuga, nobody will listen to anybody, because everybody's, you know, they have no trust in anybody or anything. They're just, you know, struggling for existence. You know,
yeah.
It becomes more and more apparent.
Yeah, same. Well, we can see that in some ways, you know, nowadays. So therefore, it's even more important that we sort of being watchful of these anarthas. They're there, and then so we have to pay attention.
They used to say, love thy neighbor, now they say, watch thy neighbor.
You were explaining that this demon presented as a beautiful white crane. So, appeared to be in meditation even, and Krishna's way of dealing with this demon was to split his beak, so there was no dialogue, no the action was to kill on the part of the demon, and Krishna responded on an equivalent level. So the demon's attempting to swallow him, and then Krishna responds by splitting the beak. So, presenting like a deceptive exterior, where somebody would want to appear that they're harmless, but in actual fact they a person that causes harm, or someone that causes harm, is quite. It's in the very opposite ends of the spectrum. in general society, you were describing, the analysis of deception, and where if it's affecting somebody else being deceptive towards one is very upset, and less so if oneself is the one practicing deception. So, that's a given. But if the deception that's practiced by somebody else is actually accepted by everyone, and that's coming from somebody who's presenting externally as harmless, but in actual fact it's an entity that's causing harm, it seems it's more difficult to go to the opposite end of the spectrum and confront the fact that, this may be an individual that's actually causing harm. Because it's easier to believe the external of this is a harmless individual. Because if you acknowledge that the external presentation is not the reality, it means the behavior has to be quite different towards the entity. And it takes some courage to acknowledge, it's actually a harmful entity. Especially if everybody else is accepting the external.
Yeah, it's quite something. You see that in modern days of societies following a particular leader or accepting a particular individual within, that type of, it becomes more like a, that is you see someone that represents some of your values that you have, and cultural values and things like that, then this person is okay. We see with certain people say, politicians that lie. And it becomes obvious that lies, oh no, it's fine. Then uh, you know, he may lie, but, you know, it's not, these other things are good, so save with the present politician that is in charge. Many people are just accepted, you know, that is very good. And lying becomes, you know, a clever way of getting some results up. So, you know, you make the deal. As long as you win. How you win? If you lie to win, the important thing is that you win. And then this is the value, this is the thing that we want. So therefore, it's okay. So as long as the common thing that is important for the group becomes is in the up from. So the common in this example, the common thing is a strong economy. You know, that people are flourishing and comfortable. So if this strong economy is there, whatever means you get to the strong economy, it doesn't matter. So in other social groups or societies and things that you know, the example that you made, some element that is harmful, but the external appearances that fits some of the values of the group, then it's all okay, it's accepted, as long as that is there. So if the value of the group is whatever, you know, service, and if the person does service, you know, say here in our community of devotees, we value the mood of service. So someone presents itself as a very, you know, that is serving, that likes to serve. And as long as that's in the front, we tend to accept it and say, oh, this is very good. And it's very difficult to sort of break from that, even if the person is fine, that you find later or something gets revealed that there is other harmful motivations that are hidden, that have been deceptively hidden. And then, oh, no, that cannot be, you know, like that. It's difficult to break from that common acceptance of this main value that we embrace. So, so we have to, in one sense, you know, in communities, both is a matter of individual and collective growth and purification, to be able to elevate oneself, and that's where the leaders becomes very important, because common people will follow leaders. Leaders have to be an examples of these qualities. So a lot of weight is in our leaders. So if you have a strong leader that represents those qualities and teaches those qualities and protects those qualities in the society, then the whole body elevates itself also. All right. Thank you so much. Garantara Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Jai.